Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
So, for me, it's those little salty pretzel nuggets. You know, the ones with the soft peanut butter core. They literally come in a bucket, and it makes the mindless shoveling of sugar, salt, and carbs just so easy. And I'm sure we all have our own food weaknesses, especially during such a stressful time as the pandemic. And the data bears it out. In the first few weeks following the shutdowns, packaged food sales spiked anywhere from 30 to 60%. But while the stress of the pandemic might have us turning to junk food, new research is showing a strong connection between what we eat and our mental health. Dr. Uma Naidu writes about the ways in which we can help our own mental health by changing what we eat. She's a professional chef, the director of nutritional and lifestyle psychiatry at Mass General Hospital, and the author of a new book, This Is Your Food, This Is Your Brain on Food. Dr. Naidu, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Thanks for joining us. And listeners, we want to invite you to the kitchen table here, so to speak. What foods have you been gravitating toward during these stressful times? What foods do you find yourself eating that you just didn't eat before the pandemic or only had once in a while and now you can't stop shoveling, say? How have you stayed mentally and physically healthy? Call us. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Okay, so Dr. Naidu, I want to start with just this simple question, which is, how are you holding up in this pandemic?
Given that we are launching my first book during the pandemic, I myself have had some stressful times, so I certainly understand how people are feeling. And when I speak to my patients, I mean, I think some people are doing worse than others. So it's been an unusual time for many. So, including myself.
Yeah. So I know this is your area of expertise, but do you have a food weakness like those salty peanut butter pretzels that I've been going to?
Yeah. So it's not necessarily pretzel to me, but it's usually some kind of salty cracker or salty snack, just because I like that crunch factor. And, you know, so I've learned to make some oven roasted kale chips and been practicing some recipes with healthier veggies in the air fryer oven. You know, so zucchini fries are a good one because they're so low calorie. And when you don't deep fry them, but use an air fryer oven, you can get a really, really delicious taste and kind of replace that crunch factor that you're looking for.
So, Dr. Naidu, I hear you, but my brain is saying one thing, my stomach is saying another thing, right?
Like, I
hear you saying kale chips, but my stomach is like, I don't want kale chips, I want the pretzels. So what is the science behind that?
So it's interesting, you know, because when we're stressed, our brain becomes hypersensitive to the rewards of tasty, high fat and high sugar foods. And it gets reinforced. So we feel, you know, we feel a certain upliftment and we feel good when we eat those things. The problem is, over the long term, they do impact our brain. The second thing is that because of how these stress circuits work, some studies have also shown that, you know, the way that the reward system through sugar works in the brain is very similar to the reward system of how cocaine works. So there is this reward cycle that gets set up, and we have to sort of step back from it and figure out, look, it's great to have a treat once in a while, but if we eat that all of the time, it is going to add up, because when we eat these sort of processed, you know, whether it's high fat or high salt or foods that have artificial dye stabilizers and things like that, they aren't good for our brain. They may just make us feel good in the short term, but ultimately studies have even showed that the high sugar levels that get caused when we have a spike in our blood sugar lead to problems in the brain, such as even atrophy and dementia over time.
Well, on that maybe sad note, I do want to bring in a caller here. We have George. He's calling from I-95. George, what have you been turning to during the pandemic?
Oh, yeah, that's scary to hear, because every week throughout the pandemic,
unfortunately, we really can't hear you there. Maybe if we can get you on a better line there. But I think the point George was going to make was that he's been turning to ice cream, and
right.
That's totally understandable, right? I guess my question coming out of George there is there a problem with from time to time turning to these comfort foods, as I'll call them?
Absolutely. So I the way that I work with in my sort of nutritional psychiatry treatment plan, I feel that people should have a treat day every week. And I don't call it a cheat day because psychologically, you feel badly if you think you're cheating on something. So call it a treat day. So whether for you it's the salty pretzels or for George it's ice cream, enjoy it on that day. Appropriate portion control, so not the whole tub. Enjoy it, and then at the next meal, the next morning or whatever it might be for you, continue a healthier diet. That way you don't feel deprived. Maybe if someone's eating ice cream every night, they need to cut back to a few days, and over time just try to replace that with a healthy recipe that almost tricks your brain into feeling it's getting that sweet taste, but with healthier ingredients. There are certain ice creams that you can make from fruit. Mm-hmm. And certain fruit definitely have a higher glycemic index than others. So again, this is not an every night treat, but it's still something. I made a delicious chocolate mousse the other day using very ripe bananas, super dark cacao, which is actually good for your brain because of the flavonoids, and a natural cocoa powder. And I added a little bit of avocado in it. And the creaminess, if you tasted it without me telling you what was in it, you would have thought you were having a dark chocolate mousse.
Sounds
so
delicious.
I think, exactly. It's almost like I do think that we have to find ways to replace those delicious foods and not feel deprived.
I just want to throw the number out here again, 1-800-423-8255. What foods have you been turning to during the pandemic? How have you been coping? Do you have any food, nutritional, mental health questions here for Dr. Naidu? Call us, 1-800-423-8255. We have another George calling from Lawrence. George, what have you been turning to?
I've been drinking a smoothie made of avocado. Believe it or not, it doesn't taste avocado. We provide us...
So what else do you put in it?
I half of a lemon, half an avocado, and two different kind of milk, together with a little bit of sugar. I don't use sugar in particular, but some people suggest to put some sugar. The result has been fantastic.
Great. Thanks for the call, George. Dr. Naidu, how about that? How about, fruit smoothies, avocado smoothies, but then also maybe a little sugar? Or do you have sugar substitute ideas that folks can
exactly
try?
So I think that George is onto a healthier option. I would give some suggestions about that. Rather than actually just using pure cane sugar, I would suggest maybe using a small drizzle of honey in to sweeten. I would also recommend about a quarter piece of a medium avocado a day, which is the portion of sort of the healthy fat from avocado that you want. You can add creaminess by putting a little bit of almond butter, which brings you back some protein and creaminess and a great flavor, and also sweetness. So the one thing I would say is try to get rid of the sugar in that and replace it with a different way to sweeten it. But otherwise, I think it's doing well. Berries are a good choice. You can throw in some greens there as well, because that gives you some great veggies, which give you natural fiber for your gut. Also important.
So you write in your book about this connection between the gut and the brain, this sort of important line of communication, our microbiome. Can you explain the new research that you're finding out about that connection?
Sure. Sure. The microbiome has been studied for a very long time, but over I would say the last few decades, we're understanding a little bit more about the connection between the gut and the brain in relation to mental health. And even though in the body they anatomically not close by, they are connected by the vagus nerve. And the vagus nerve is something I like to call the bidirectional superhighway, which connects the gut to the brain. And it also means that this communication, think about it as a mass pike in your body, mm-hmm. And it's pretty much traveling and it's fast all
for
the time.
For me, it's definitely a mass pike, for sure.
and then another thing people need to understand is there is, number one, a connection. Number two, serotonin is known as the happy hormone, and more than 90% of serotonin receptors are in the gut. So that should help people understand that when you eat something, you might immediately, or over time, I should say, have an impact on how you feel. So there are several reasons for that. And then the actual microbiome is made up of at least 39 trillion bacteria that live there. And our goal is to, on most most times and most meals to try to grow and support the healthy bugs and not the unhealthy ones. I'm sure I don't need to tell you that the unhealthy bugs love processed foods, sugar, salty snacks, and all the stuff that's bad for us. And when they start to thrive, over time is when we start to set up inflammation in the body. And you hear conditions like leaky gut and other things like that. Well, another component of that is people present with mental health symptoms as well. Depression, anxiety, etc.
So, and what about the effect of so many of these substitute products that you see out there, Splenda or aspartame, or just the artificialness of all of that? You write about that in the book, but tell us what that does to the brain and for your mental health.
Exactly. So many of them are super sweet, and they are most of them are gut disruptors. The two that are healthier than others. So if you're really struggling with sugar and you're trying to embrace a healthier lifestyle and move, nothing can be done overnight, but move towards healthier options, you might want to consider smaller amounts of stevia or erythritol. If you say have 6 sugars in your coffee in the morning and you want to start cutting back, those might be good ways to start. But in general, the sweeteners have a pretty high profile of being gut disruptors, and they're by disrupting the gut, meaning that they change that imbalance and they start to create a problem in that way, and others that we describe in the book. It's just easier to avoid them for your mental health, because I know that in anxiety, for example, they actually worsen anxiety.
So Kellen is calling from Ashburnham. Kellen, what's on your mind?
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I actually work as a registered dietitian, and I'm very passionate about eating disorder recovery. And I'm listening, I'm wondering if I could hear some thoughts on maybe if it's worthwhile to put some more nuance into the conversation and think about people's relationship with food and how it might be affected by all of this talk about sugar and replacing things like chips with kale chips, because fundamentally, they're two very different things, kind of, as you noted. So right. I'm just really curious to hear her thoughts about that. I'll take my answer off to you.
Thanks, Kellen. I was having a little bit of trouble hearing you, but I think you said you're a registered dietitian. How about that, Dr. Naidu?
So I didn't actually hear some of the question. I'm sorry. Could you repeat it for me?
So sure. She's calling for some nuance, for folks who might have eating disorders in thinking about replacing foods and
sure.
what they're eating.
I think that's a great question, Kellen. We thank you for calling in. I would say that, with eating disorders, as a psychiatrist and having practiced for a few decades now, they are a particularly difficult diagnosis to treat and very important to offer well-rounded care. So, my approach is always sort of an holistic mind-body approach that is integrated and functional. And in terms of that, what I mean is I always look for root cause. With eating disorders, it may be more complicated than just about what someone is eating and when they're eating it. There are often deep psychological factors that go on, and something that we need to understand. So, there are components of different types of talking therapy that are involved. Sometimes it's a program that needs to be involved so the individual can really be helped to ease from the more difficult behaviors that they are struggling with to a healthier way to embrace food. Their relationship with food, in other words, is much more complicated than, saying, you would like a salty snack, have kale chips instead. I agree with that. It's much more complicated and nuanced, and we have to have the conversation with an individual patient to understand where they're at, what sort of help they need, and it might be that they need much more than just a conversation around the food. Because in my experience in working with eating disordered individuals, it is much deeper than that. I would fully agree with that.
So we are, the clock is ticking down here, so I do want to get to a couple of other things here. I was struck in your book by your support of a Mediterranean-style food plan. Yeah, I could just hear my dad yelling in my ear, you got to eat fresh vegetables, whole grains, fresh fruit, and olive oil on everything. But why does this style of eating again and again prove so healthy?
Absolutely. So there's a good amount of research data that the Mediterranean eating pattern, Mediterranean diet, actually has been shown to improve mood disorders. So I think that is one really good data point for us to know and understand. The other is that many of those things that, we hear doctors and dietitians and nutritionists talk about, like myself, there's a greater meaning to it. Feeding our the bugs in our gut with the right types of food helps them thrive. Mm. And you can only get fiber from fruit, vegetables, beans, nuts, seeds, legumes, and healthy whole grains. You cannot get it from seafood protein, no matter how healthy it is, or lean meats. So when we say that, one of the very important reasons in mental health is that it's feeding fiber to the bugs, and the fiber helps them produce the healthier substances that really help balance our mood, help our gut function properly, and actually fend off inflammation, which is the basis of many different diseases. So, you know, there are other factors such as olive oil having anti-inflammatory and antioxidant effects. You can have, you know, a good source of protein from beans, nuts, legumes, and seeds. There is additional fiber in some of those and other nutrients. So that's really the impetus behind that diet. And then it's been proven to help mood. So I think it's, you know, it's an easy way to go and while still having your treat day.
Yeah. And I'm also reminded that you wrote about the power of blueberries and PTSD. And I'm just wondering, yes. You know, what other foods would you suggest that actively support good mental health?
Absolutely. So things that are antioxidant and anti-inflammatory support good mental health. Some things that one should think about, which are unusual and you may not yet be including in your diet, and some people may, are things like the spiced turmeric with a pinch of black pepper. There are several randomized controlled trials that have shown an improvement in depression and a lowering of anxiety, as well as other symptoms, because of the powerful antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, and other effects. If it's not something you're cook with, added to a soup or a smoothie.
And how would you use it? I mean, for someone who doesn't use it regularly.
Sure. So a quarter teaspoon with a pinch of black pepper, you can put it into a smoothie. I promise you won't even taste it. And the reason to add black pepper is it makes the curcumin and turmeric bioactive, which makes it more helpful to your brain. Secondly, you could use it in a stir fry if you do cook with it. But some other things that you could add are just foods rich in prebiotic fiber and probiotics. Probiotics are things like yogurt with active cultures or fermented foods, kefir. And I suggest yogurts or kefir, I always say the unfruited kind, because the added sugars just don't do us any good. Buy the plain style yogurt and add berries or cinnamon to make it sweet for you.
Just because I'm aware that the clock is ticking by. And so in our just final 30 seconds here, Dr. Naidu, perhaps to folks listening who are feeling anxious, feeling worried, hearing all of these suggestions and maybe even that is giving them a little bit of anxiety. Just what's your one sentence tip for folks?
Sure. Include omega-3 foods such as salmon, fatty fish, and salmon, and include spices like turmeric with a pinch of black pepper, and avoid sugar, processed vegetable oils, and artificial sweeteners. That will start you off on a good path.
That sounds great. Dr. Uma Naidu, she's a professional chef, the director of nutritional and lifestyle psychiatry at Mass General, and she's the author of the new book, This Is Your Brain on Food. Dr. Naidu, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It was wonderful.